Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, December the 27th. Merry Christmas to all of you. I guess we have to start saying Happy New Year as well. So Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to all of you. Like we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Two big stories we want to talk with Bill today. One is this relocation happening in the country from people moving from blue states to red states. And it's now happening in numbers that are consequential. So we'll talk about that. And we're also going to hear more about the Twitter story. What exactly was going on at Twitter? Whatever it was, I don't think it was good, especially with the FBI as part of the conversation. So just a couple of big stories we'll be addressing today with our friend Bill Katz. So let me say hello to Bill. Bill, how is the weather, these storms in New York, treating you? I mean, what we see on television is pretty nasty, but much of it is in Buffalo, not necessarily New York Cityville.
That's right. Silvio, the real action is on the west part of New York State, which is Buffalo, which is as far west, I think, as you can get, where they got 4 feet of snow. We didn't get any snow here in the New York City area, but we did get a lot of bitter cold. Oh, I wouldn't say bitter, you know, severe cold. They in Buffalo really got hit. They got severe cold, bitter cold, and 4 feet of snow, one of the biggest snowstorms they've ever had. And, of course, it carried with it, sadly, some casualties. But here in New York, it's very calm. People are just putting on their winter coats, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it is about New York. Maybe it's Buffalo. I don't know if it's the lake or the proximity to Canada, but they sure get some nasty snowstorms. I recall in the early days of the Carter administration, I guess he had been in office for a couple of weeks, where they had a really big storm in Buffalo. I mean, they couldn't get out. People couldn't get out of their houses. I mean, it was pretty bad. But this was almost 45 years ago, Bill.
Yes. Well, you know, you're correct about the weather in Buffalo. There are also some other areas of the Northeast and, of course, the Midwest that got severe snow. So far this it's not winter yet, actually, is it? Oh, yes, it is now winter after December 21st. We haven't gotten any snow, maybe an occasional slight dusting, but we're in a pretty moderate range. However, it is possible later in the winter that we can get a large snowstorm. We did a couple of years ago. So far, this weather that we see is what we see entirely on television.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's it. I mean, there's, I understand enough about New York to know that just because they say storms in New York, it doesn't mean New York City. In this case, you know, Buffalo, and Buffalo always gets a lot of storms. So
yes,
we're hoping that everybody there is okay. Now, of course, whenever you have one of these storms, and I don't know if it always happened this way or if it's more recent, but you got people looting stores. And they're stealing dresses. I don't know if they're going to wear a dress in the middle of a storm, but they're looting everything, which is, I guess, another sign that people just don't fear breaking the law, Bill. I mean, how else do you explain this? People breaking into all kinds of stores. I mean, I can certainly understand if a man is hungry and cannot feed his family and, you know, the old story, but that's not the type of stores being looted, Bill.
That's correct. The news tells us that the looting has expanded throughout the United States to include almost everything, that the police are overwhelmed. And in some cities, of course, the police are so discouraged because the even if they catch the looters, they're not prosecuted because of wokeism and the control of many cities by the Democratic Party, which doesn't regard criminals as criminals, but as victims of society. This is extraordinarily serious. There was a gentleman on this morning who said that they are now looting stores and selling what they have looted to legitimate business people who are then looking the other way, buying it at a lower price and then selling it back to the same stores. Just incredible what is going on. It's a complete breakdown of law, which is, of course, exactly what the left dreams of. This to them, this is good. You know, I've always said people don't realize that high crime rates benefit certain people and not just the criminals. They benefit certain leaders in the community who can then look at the high crime rate and say, this won't stop unless you give us certain programs that we need. And the programs, of course, only benefit the leaders. So I think we have a scandal here that is even larger than it appears, but we have a national press that tends to play it down because the national press is on the left. The leftism of American institutions, the universities, the school systems, the press, can destroy this country, and that's not an exaggeration.
No, not at all. I thought it was interesting. The mayor of Buffalo was, I guess, having a news conference with the governor standing next to him, and he was talking about, you know, how can these people look at themselves in the mirror when they go home at night after doing stuff like this? And I guess I can understand his frustration, but if I had been a member of the media, I would have said, well, Mr. Mayor, maybe it's because nothing happens to him.
Yes.
Maybe it's because do these things and never, I mean, most of the time, these stores have cameras. So I'm sure many of these people were caught doing whatever they were doing. Certainly there are videos in the media. You should be able to identify a couple of these people. But nothing happens to them. You know, this is similar to what happened in the summer of 2020. You know, we're going to loot liquor stores in the name of social justice. I mean, that's interesting, Bill.
Well, this is that's the thing. They consider this part of social justice, that this is payback. It's payback for all the years of oppression. What I always wonder about is this. You go into Washington, D.C., to Massachusetts Avenue, and you find a whole row of embassies. That's why they call it Embassy Row. And each day those embassies send back to their country news about the United States and their impressions of the United States. And I can just wonder what those impressions are right now. They have seen a country in the middle of a pandemic where law broke down, cities were burning, people were not going to prison, statues of great Americans they've learned about being torn down, nothing happened. Now they're seeing more and more looting. And they wonder, is this a country we can depend on? I know that in the late 1960s that happened. I remember one of the major Israeli figures was made ambassador to Washington, and he later said it in his memoir. He said, I saw two assassinations, Robert Kennedy and Dr. King. I saw rioting, and I wondered, is this the country we're depending on? And I have a feeling this is happening again, that we are going to be sidelined to a certain degree as countries, more and more countries realize they have to depend on themselves and on alliances with other countries. And I'm sorry to say that I think more and more countries in Asia might doubt our willingness to confront China and become allies of China.
Right. I guess it's one thing if they, you know, the way I look at it, it's one thing if they thought about defending themselves, because maybe they need to be thinking more that way. They've gotten used to being defended by the United States. My problem is the alliance that you're talking about, Bill, is the alliance with China, and that is not in our interest, and you're seeing some of that happening in Latin America, where many of these left-wing governments who've come to power here in the last year or so are developing close relationships with China. And that's not in our interest. I can tell you that right now. That's not in our interest, Bill.
No, it's in the interest of the international left. And I'm sorry to say that the international left has influence in Washington and with the press. I mean, you know, this is something that the press will not talk about. If you question them, and this happened during the Trump administration, you're attacking democracy itself.
Right.
I mean, I never knew when criticism of the press was an attack on democracy. I thought criticism of the press was democracy.
Right. Well, that's right. Well, that's, you know, the old story about election deniers. You know, there was no problem with denying elections when they were talking about President Trump or President George W. Bush. It was very fashionable to deny those elections, but my goodness,
yes.
Don't you dare say anything about 2020, because then you're a threat to democracy. I mean, that's the real problem, I think, Bill.
I think it is, too. I mean, the left has set itself up, and the leftist press, as the defender of democracy, which, of course, they are not. Now, had they said in 2020, we have not found evidence of corruption in elections, at least not evidence large enough to reverse the election, I would have accepted that. I mean, unless somebody could prove otherwise. But they not only denied that the election of 2020 was rigged or influenced, they dropped the whole subject of election integrity. Election integrity is a problem in America. Stealing elections, as I've always said, stealing elections in America is as American as stealing elections. It's been going on for decades in our big cities. The late-night comedians, who really don't exist anymore since they're not very funny, but the late-night comedians used to make jokes about voting in Chicago, and we didn't take it seriously enough. But,
right.
But election corruption is a historic American problem.
Now, Bill, I wanted to mention something because just a few minutes before we connected today, I saw a story that Secretary Blinken, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Secretary Blinken was saying that if we were still in Afghanistan, we wouldn't be able to fight in Taiwan or something like that. I'm not exactly sure. Did you hear that? Because he was basically saying, if I understood him correctly, he was saying that we could not fight or we could not defend two allies at the same time. That's what I thought he was saying. And if you haven't heard it, then I won't. Maybe we'll mention it the next time. But I think that's a pretty shocking statement if he's saying something like that, because that, if you're Taiwan, you're wondering what the heck is he saying, Bill.
Well, I haven't seen that statement yet, but it wouldn't surprise me, because the administration has always tried to defend its action in Afghanistan, which is indefensible. The standard for the United States Department of Defense traditionally has been the ability to fight two wars at the same time. And that's entirely understandable when you look at World War II. We were fighting two wars at the same time, one against Germany, one against Japan. And that has been the standard. I don't know if it's the standard today, because our military has been weakened by this administration, and of course the Obama administration as well. We are having trouble recruiting soldiers, because who wants to go into a military whose main issue is being woke rather than fighting our wars? There's no great inspiration in being a Marine when the Marine Corps is involved in wokeism and has sent out advisories saying, please avoid words like sir and ma'am. We are in danger as a nation. It isn't only the danger that we would lose a war, but a danger that we could not fight one. And the ability to fight a war and win it is what creates deterrence. It's what makes peace possible. And I think we are losing that, and it is a very great risk. And yet you can go through an election campaign, as we just did, an entire election campaign, without the term foreign policy even being mentioned. That is the role of the press, and the press is playing a very bad role in this country.
Absolutely. By the way, a story just broke through as you were talking a second ago, that the Supreme Court has ordered Title 42 border restriction to be kept in effect. So this is, I guess, the latest. It just literally broke here in the last 30 seconds. So the Supreme Court accepted the challenge, I guess, from Texas and other states about the borders. So let's go to that. That was one of my stories, but let's go to that since we have this breaking story. I see Title 42. I mean, some people think it's a good idea. Some other people say, no, we shouldn't be using it. But either way, it seems to me there's a larger issue here, which is the total complete absence of presidential leadership on the border. Yes. When you have what's happening in El Paso is a border town that for years it's kind of a quiet little town. It's actually a very pretty town this time of the year because of the mixture of the Mexican and the Texas culture. I mean, it's a very pretty time of the year to be in El Paso. And yet the whole city is in an emergency, Bill. I mean, people cannot go downtown because they literally have to walk over people who are laying on the streets, and it's pathetic. I mean, how do you allow a city to get like that, Bill? We're talking about a city of 500,000 people. This is not a small border town. This is a major city. Such an absence of presidential leadership, and maybe that's why the Supreme Court stepped in saying, if you're not going to do it, we're going to do it, Bill.
I think that's a very interesting point that you make. How did all this happen? El Paso, I think we actually mentioned this on our last show, used to be such a beautiful city. It was considered the model border city. And
yes.
Today it is in crisis through no fault of its own. And yet nobody seems to care. Maybe the governor of Texas cares, but certainly
well,
in Washington.
Yeah.
Yes, well, certainly in Washington, I mean, where the establishment has contempt for the state of Texas, contempt for the South, contempt for just about anywhere but where they live.
Right.
And maybe they have a little bit of respect for New York City and respect for Los Angeles. But cities, you know, I think it was Toynbee who said, civilizations don't die, they commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
We are watching suicide occur. I mean, Los Angeles has just elected as its mayor a woke, left-wing African-American woman whose great goal in life was to be our first ambassador to Cuba once we reestablished relations, and is a fan of Fidel Castro. How do you elect someone with those views to run a city in crisis? That's what
right.
I don't understand. You have to go back also to the political parties. We noted in the last election there was a great complaint about the quality of candidates. I think that plays a role. We had a congressman here, a newly elected congressman here in New York, who was elected, I'm sorry to say, was a Republican, who now has admitted he lied about his entire background during his campaign. Well, that's what reporters do. They do some minimal checking of candidates for high public office, and congressman is a high public office. But they do nothing. It harkens back to the 2008 presidential election when Barack Obama was not asked a single serious question by the national
right.
press. There were questions about his background, where he came from, what he did, what he believed. Nothing. Nothing. He is going to be our first black president, and that's it. And I think the failure of institutions in America today has now become so great that one has to wonder whether we can ever recover from this or whether we have developed a generation of people who are going to lead us to the end of the United States. You know, it's often said that democracies have 250 years, and then things start to fall apart when people realize they can raid the Treasury. We are about 250 years old, and we are raiding the Treasury. So
right.
I get chills when I think about it.
No, I think you have to, because I saw a statement or something in the news yesterday that there's like 14 states, all of them blue states, where you're actually better off not working. Because the benefits
yes.
that you get from government, from state government, and now with Obamacare, you don't have to work. You can just actually stay home, and what you do, I don't know, but you can stay home and get these benefits. And I think what a lot of these people do is they get an under-the-table job, and they've got another business going. So as far as the state government is concerned, these people are poor. But they're making money because they can stay home and get these benefits, and that's killing a lot of the small businesses, the restaurants, the manufacturing shops that cannot compete with these state benefits, Bill. I mean, now you understand, and that's one of another topics we'll get to today, why a lot of these manufacturing operations are moving south because they don't have
yes.
that problem in the South. In the South, people actually have to work to make a living, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely true. I was having lunch many years ago, I think this was in the 1980s, with representatives of my Swedish publisher. And they told me, in discussing the way Sweden was run, they said half of Stockholm takes care of the other half of Stockholm.
That's
so
right.
half the city wasn't even working. And that was considered very progressive because people have reasons for not working. They may be emotionally distressed. Well, okay, there may be individual cases, but we have exactly what you're describing today. It is better in some states not to work than to work. You get more in benefits, and the Democratic Party loves you, and that's it. Or, as you say, people have things on the side, taxes are not being paid. Now, the Democratic Party has just enacted into law a provision to increase enormously the number of IRS agents. But what is so frustrating about that is most of the people they'll audit will be innocent. It is the guilty people, especially the big shots, who get away with it. And Americans know unfairness when they see it. The country is not happy. The country is not happy with the results of the election. The Republican Party blew it by having a lot of candidates who shouldn't have been candidates, by not working hard enough, by not organizing around the new ways of voting, such as the mail-in ballots and the early voting. And now they are literally fighting over who's going to be Speaker of the House, and it's only a week before the new Congress meets. They have to hit the ground running on their issues, or the Democrats are going to be all over them, and they're debating who the Speaker should be. The Republicans have got to wake up. They really do. The old story, we've said it many times on this program, that Republicans work hard to lose elections, and they often succeed. They have a little bit of an opportunity now in the House, and it's being dissipated by this internal struggle.
Well, the opportunity in the House is huge, especially in one of the topics that we'll be talking about in a minute. But there's no question that, you know, let's talk a little bit about this blue states, people moving to red states. You're seeing the numbers are huge. I mean, this is no longer, you know, a business moving from California to Texas. I mean, that's more than that now. Now we're talking about numbers, 600,000, 500,000 people moving from California to other places, New York to other places. And I guess the two biggest beneficiaries are Texas and Florida, but the other states are benefiting as well in huge numbers. And Bill, I don't know every one of these people who is moving, but I would venture to say that they pay taxes or there are people who take care of themselves who are sick and tired of the lifestyle, they're sick and tired of the way of doing business. I remember a few years ago a man in the wood manufacturing business who moved from California to Texas, and I happened to know him because we were doing business, and I said, well, why did you move? And he said, well, have you tried dealing with a state government that has more forms than you've got time to fill out? And that's the reason, and this is, I mean, I look at this from down here, and I said Texas is benefiting from it. But if I was in New York, I'd be worried or in California, because the people staying behind, they're going to have to pay higher taxes, Bill.
That's right. Well, New York and California are the two largest out-migration states in the country, and for good reason. People have found and learned that there are other parts of the United States that actually exist, that they're good places with good people. Florida is booming because of one man, Ron DeSantis. I wrote an urgent agenda this week. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a presidential election in 2024 between Ron DeSantis, the governor of the most successful state in the country, and Gavin Newsom, the governor of the least successful state in the country? Mm-hmm. I mean, California is losing population by the hundreds of thousands. Florida is gaining population and is booming. I would love to know how the press would cover that election. They'd be for Newsom. I mean, they'd be for Newsom even if California was sinking into the Pacific, because that's what the party line requires. But we're in bad shape. We really are.
Yes, and this blue to red is really such an important issue, because it's not just political changes or the number of congressional districts. I mean, it's beyond that. I think these are permanent changes. These people are not going back. And, you know, you've often talked about New York City and how that city may be gone, the city that we knew, the great New York City. These people are not going back. And how these cities like New York and L.A. and Chicago, how they recover from all of this, I have no idea, Bill, because the leadership in those places either doesn't know or doesn't want to know. Because then maybe they benefit from the current situation. I don't know. But the taxpayers in those cities are not benefiting from it. I mean, they are really being hurt big time by this kind of political situation. Bill, let me take a little break, and then when we come back, I've got a few other things to get into with Bill. We want to talk a little bit about Twitter and something that Bill wrote today about Hollywood. Had a bad year, Hollywood. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I'm going to go back very briefly to 1979 because it was on this day, you may remember, that the Soviet Union went into Afghanistan and what had to be one of the biggest mistakes of the 20th century. But when they pulled out about 10 years later, they left an Afghanistan that was an even bigger mess. And the Afghanistan that we had to deal with later because of 9/11, and the Afghanistan that we're dealing with right now. So when the Soviets came in, it was a horrible decision that had it. We're still living with that, Bill.
Well, yes, we are. You know, it's very interesting that you mentioned Afghanistan in 1979 because we have a tendency, or had a tendency, to portray Russia as 10 feet tall. We did it during the Cold War, you know, and after all, we wondered whether we could defeat them, and we should always be conscious of the power of an enemy, but at times we really exaggerated their abilities. You go back even to the Cuban Missile Crisis, which they botched completely. I mean, they got caught trying to bring nuclear-tipped missiles into Cuba, and they lost that round rather substantially. In 79, they lost the Afghanistan operation very substantially. They are now involved in Ukraine, and I think most Americans are stunned at how incompetent they are. Mm-hmm. Now, the Soviet Union we knew during the Cold War was the Soviet Union that was our ally in World War II and fought valiantly, I have to say, even though it was Joe Stalin's Soviet Union. And I think we had that image in mind. But one of the reasons they fought valiantly in World War II is, first of all, they were fighting on their own territory.
Right.
And people defend their own territory. And also, the people of Russia or the Soviet Union were left to almost starve while all the resources went to the military. So, and they had those resources, and they used them. And as much as I hate to say it, because it was the Soviet Union, they were vital to our victory in World War II and to keeping down American casualties. And I think that was the image we had. It turned out not to be quite accurate. They had revolutions against them in Hungary and Czechoslovakia. They as I said, lost spectacularly at the Cuban Missile Crisis, then in Afghanistan, and then the Soviet Union literally did collapse.
Mm-hmm.
But the danger today, as we watch them stumble in Ukraine, is that we may underestimate them, and that is my
right.
fear. They have shown remarkable incompetence, but I'm not so sure Putin how long he has to live or how long he'll be in power. And we know that the Russians today are capable of building remarkably advanced military equipment. They've always built great tanks. And we have to be careful not to underestimate them because
That's
they
right.
can hurt. And
right now
we're in Ukraine, but it's possible that the Russians may try to put pressure on one or two NATO countries simply to dissipate our strength. And then, of course, on the other side, we have a China that is growing in power. Its navy is now larger than the United States Navy, and they're, we assume, are getting better at it. Remember, at one time, we used to look at China as kind of a backwater with a lot of people that couldn't do anything. They're today among the world's most precise manufacturers. They learn, just as the
That's
Japanese
right.
learned high quality in manufacturing after the Second World War. And we have to have the best intelligence, the best information, and the willingness of the press to examine it carefully, because, as we said earlier in this broadcast, this country is in danger.
Yes, I agree, and I think the media is one of our biggest problems. But one thing that did come out of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan is, of course, President Reagan's leadership. When he put those missiles on the shoulders of the insurgents, and those missiles began to shoot down Soviet helicopters, and it got to the point that the Soviet Army did not want to fly those helicopters because they were being shot down like birds. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. But that took a man like Reagan with the courage to do that, Bill. I mean, that was not an easy decision, but one that he made as president, because he knew that defeating the Soviets in Afghanistan was a good thing, just like defeating the Russians in Ukraine is a good thing, Bill.
Yes. Well, you know, there's an old saying that personnel is policy. In other words, who you hire to do the job is going to determine how well the job gets done. And I think that this is something, and you're beginning to see a little bit of it, where Americans and a few members of the press are beginning to look at the personnel policies of this country's government and even the personnel policies of this country's educational system. Who is getting hired? How many times have you heard, when one of these stories comes out about a woke teacher abusing students, how many times have you heard somebody say, I wonder how that person got to be a teacher? And you're hearing it more and more. You're hearing more and more. You heard it in the last election campaign. How did this person ever get to run for office on the Democratic ticket? Or the Republican ticket. We had on our side some real candidates who should never have been candidates. The Republican candidate for governor of Pennsylvania was a disgrace.
Yes, and he was defeated
by a man I would disagree with on policy questions, but on other questions, character and everything, he was first class. We have to learn to do that better. We have to learn to have the best people. There now, as you know, is a discussion and a debate within the Republican Party on the chair of the party, whether she is the best person for the job. That's the kind of discussion we should be having all over the country, on filling posts in universities, on filling cabinet positions and positions generally in our government. We find under Democratic rule these periodic crackpots who come up, who do not in any way reflect public opinion and the feelings of the American people, but they get jobs in Democratic administrations because they represent a constituency that the party needs. Personnel is policy, and we better start worrying about personnel.
Well, I was thinking, as you were saying that, Bill, there's three people that came to mind as you were saying that. The Secretary of Transportation, who apparently must be on paternity leave again, because you have all these storms shutting down airports. I haven't heard anything from the man, the Secretary of Transportation. Then you have the press secretary, who is literally a joke. I don't know how anybody in that room can take her seriously. I mean, you talk about, you know, doing a job beyond your ability. That's that lady. And then the Secretary of Energy, who is, I don't know, where is the Secretary of Energy, Bill? I mean, have you seen her recently? So these people in this White House, and I think a lot of Americans are reacting like you're reacting, Bill, which is to say, how do these people get these jobs? I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican. You want somebody, a Secretary of Transportation, who at least can say something in the middle of these storms shutting down airports, Bill.
Well, you have no real standard for political positions any longer. I mean, there should be, certainly in the case of transportation and energy, there should be a standard that the person holding the position of secretary should have had a history of competence in that field or in a related field. It doesn't have to be that field exactly. We've had secretaries of defense who've come from industry and who've done a fine job because they know how to run a big operation. But there certainly should be, first, a requirement of competence in administration, in running things. Second, it would be good in many of these areas to have somebody with professional experience at handling that subject matter, especially in the case of energy, where you're dealing with very complex matters of what kind of energy we need and should have in the country, what it will look like, what it will cost. Pete Buttigieg, who has that position, as you say, isn't there. Maybe, again, he's out on paternity leave or is on a vacation. But his whole qualification for office was that he was gay and that he had been mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And those are not great qualifications to be Secretary of Energy. We do not seem to hold people to a very high standard.
I think you mean transportation with Pete, but I get your point.
Well,
yeah,
yes,
Pete,
yes.
Yeah, transportation. But again, that is one of the most – that, you know, right now, that should have been one of the most important decisions made by the Biden administration or any administration. When you've got a global chain problem, you've got supply problems – you've got, like, you know, there should have been somebody from the industry who should have had that job as Secretary of Transportation, not, you know, not, like you say, somebody who was selected because of identity politics, and that's all he was, just an identity politics selection. I mean, Secretary of Energy is, of course, I can't even think of her name, and she didn't have
Jennifer
any background in energy either.
Jennifer Granholm.
Yeah, but she had no background that I know in energy.
Her background was she was governor of Michigan, and
right.
She was a woman. I mean, everything
right. Well,
is identity politics. You mentioned the press secretary. I have no problem whatsoever with an African-American press secretary. More power to her. But the reality is she had no real qualifications. The job of press secretary to a president is one that has to be given to someone with enormous proved competence, and she didn't have that. She was another identity appointment, and that is no way to run anything. Look, Kamala Harris was an identity appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really thought of her. She had run for president, for God's sake, on the Democratic or run for the nomination for president on the Democratic side, and she had to withdraw before one vote was cast because she was going nowhere in the polls. You occasionally will find that gifted individual who has no background in an area but great creativity and great zeal. But we don't even have that. I don't think most Americans even know who the Secretary of State is. I think they know something about General Austin as Secretary of Defense. But we used to have cabinet members who really were stars in themselves on occasion, not always. And we used to have leaders in Congress who were stars. Everybody in my generation growing up knew who the Speaker of the House was. It was Sam Rayburn. Rayburn was a very, very important political figure, whether you liked him or not. They knew others. They knew Averell Harriman, who was governor of New York, but he had also been ambassador to Soviet Russia. There were people below the presidential level who were important in American life. Because they were in politics or they were in industry, and people said, what about making that person president? He is so competent, or she. And you just don't have that anymore.
No.
You have the latest one to seem to get into some trouble is Elon Musk, who bought Twitter, and we had great hope for Twitter. We may still have great hope for Twitter, but he seems to get himself into trouble an awful lot.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about Twitter, the larger picture of Twitter, but let me go to another. You just posted recently a story about Hollywood, and apparently 2022 was not a good year for Hollywood, and anybody watching movies, I mean, you don't have to be a genius or a media critic to understand what their problem is. They're not making movies that connect with the people who buy the tickets, Bill.
Of course.
Disney is example number one. I grew up at a time when going to the movies was a big deal. It was everybody's favorite date night. You know, you go to a
That's
movie
exactly
and then you
right.
go out to eat. And
That's right.
you go see movies and people would talk about movies. I remember when Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid came out, how, you know, everybody was talking about that and you got to see that movie. And then the other one, The Sting, was a very popular movie that everybody wanted to see. And others, I'm sure that I can think of, but there was a big deal to go to a movie because you felt, wow, they're going to give us a big product. Now you go to the movies and you're watching a movie with a 6-year-old kid, and they're talking about topics that, like climate change. Yeah, I want to know how many six-year-old kids are talking about climate change, Bill.
That's right. Well, they are now trying to get these young elementary school students involved in the issues of importance to the Democratic Party left, because it is their fundamental philosophy that a school exists primarily not to educate but to indoctrinate, that we are training soldiers for the future, not military soldiers but political soldiers. And yet the press will not report it that way. They really won't. I see now that on the school board level, where we had such great success in the last election, that the left is now getting organized to put woke people on school boards, as if there weren't enough of them. But now they realize they have a problem in an area that they had dominated, and they are fighting back, and we have to be aware that they're fighting back. They want not only woke people on school boards, they want people who are openly woke, because the game on the school boards for years was that people would run as members of the community, your friend and neighbor, Joe, and it turned out that Joe was a leftist.
Right.
And they took over school boards in conservative areas, and people couldn't believe what was being done.
That's right. No, that's it. And I think in a lot of parts of the country, they're going to have a very difficult time getting back to win elections, because I think the parents are awake to their game. I also think, and this kind of ties into what we were saying before about blue to red population, that what you're going to see in a lot of red states is a movement to give parents school choice. Now, you're going to see it here in Texas. That's one of the issues in the legislature. And I think the more that that happens, the more that the parents are, school boards may become irrelevant if you as a parent can choose where to send your kids. Because you would say, well, I don't care what you guys want to do at the school board. I'm taking my taxes, and I'm going in this direction. So that, I think, is another big victory waiting to happen. And hopefully it will be an issue in 2024. It was to some extent in 2022, but it could be a bigger one in 2024, Bill.
I think that school choice could be the biggest issue in the country, because it affects every family, even families without children. If they don't have children themselves, their siblings might have children. I mean, children are everywhere.
That's right. Well, sure.
And it could be the biggest issue, because it is such an obvious one for Republicans, that people should have the choice. They should present it as a right of parents. There should be a parents' bill of rights, an informal one, that is presented by the Republican Party. And once they present it, they might even decide to talk about it, which they were very poor at in the last election. And yes, saying we are the party of school choice, we want every parent in America to be able to choose the school for their child. Parents are the first teachers. It will be a big issue. It was a big issue. It was the issue that flipped Virginia, was parental discontent. And the party just will not learn its lessons. This should have been the biggest issue of the last campaign as well. But I think on an individual state-by-state basis, where we get good Republican candidates, and we've had some, they will make that a very, very large issue. Now, we have learned in recent weeks that we have to be very careful in pursuing that issue, not to violate state laws that are already in place, because I forgot which state it was. Was it Oklahoma, where the initiative for school choice failed because of a court decision that it violated parts of the state constitution? Well, we have good lawyers, too, on our side, who should go after examine every proposal for school choice in the states and make sure they are already legal and that they can be put in place immediately, which is what I think is being done, at least to some degree, in Virginia. But it is a big issue. Education is a big issue. The disgust in the country with universities. Victor Davis Hanson wrote a piece on this a few days ago, pointing out that universities are losing students overall by dramatic amounts, at the same time that they are hiring thousands of diversity employees, that the University of California and Yale both hired more diversity employees in recent years than faculty members. People don't go to college to learn a history or mathematics from a diversity employee.
No.
They really don't.
Right. Well, and you're seeing it here in Texas, where a representative is going to be introducing a bill. This is in the state government. where a representative is going to be introducing a bill that says that universities cannot do any more of this segregation. That's what it is, segregation.
That's right, yes.
Where they put black kids in, you know, they're, you know, either, you know, we're all together or, you know, or we're not going to do it. And it's happening in many places. I think the issue in Oklahoma, I think that's where it was. You do have to be careful that you don't mix religion with school choice. That, I mean, that it's that you know, I don't think that maybe the Catholic schools or the Christian schools should be getting money from the state or something like that. I think that's the issue. I think it can be worked out.
That
it
can
be worked out.
Out.
Yeah, but it is, I think, a concern. Let me go to one. By the way, back to Hollywood 2022. I'm not surprised to see that story, but do you think they can recover, Bill? Because can they have the market like they used to have it at one time, or is this a little bit like the city of New York that it's just never coming back, Bill?
It'll be very difficult. At one time, 90 million Americans went to the movies every week. Now, of course, that was the age before television. But it was also an age when the country was much smaller, and yet 90 million people would go to the movies. The movies were our entertainment.
Yes.
You had radio dramas, but of course you couldn't see anything. You didn't have television yet. It was the golden age of film. Movie studios were actually movie studios and not divisions of big corporations. The entertainment area was filled with talented people. Hollywood recruited writers from Broadway, and it was with certainly exceptions. And not every movie was a gem, but we produced enough gems to call it the golden age of Hollywood. What you have today is companies in Hollywood that are more like Wall Street companies than like entertainment
yes.
companies. One executive bragged that half of his interns came from Ivy League schools. Who the hell cares? I don't care if they went to school at all. I care about their talent, their ability to make a movie. We were watching over the weekend. We watch movies on weekends, usually classic movies. But we did watch a few over the weekend. One was The Fabelmans, which was Steven Spielberg's autobiography. And a lot of people are very curious about that. That was so beautifully done. It was just so well done, but he is a classic filmmaker. He knows how to make a movie. He made West Side Story into the beautiful movie that it became. And then we watched something called The Glass Onion, which was portrayed in some of these pseudo-reviews as a suspense film. Well, I like suspense films. It was the biggest piece of garbage, of overpriced garbage, what they must have spent on that movie to produce it. I mean, it went on, and it was meaningless. The plot was a mess. The writing was a mess. They had very good special effects, which is what they have nowadays. The cast was like watching the UN, these obvious assignment of people by race and what they look like. I mean, that's not the way to make a movie. And the fact is, this country has made it. The question was asked a few years ago by someone in Hollywood, could we make a movie like An American in Paris again, which was, of course, the great classic with Gene mm-hmm. Kelly and Leslie Caron. I don't think so. We don't have the talent today. We don't have the craftsmanship today. That does not get passed on automatically. And we have some good things today. We have some very good television today. It is really, in a way, a second golden age of television, in part because of the opening of the spectrum, the spectrum to so many more channels. But Edwin R. Murrow's concept of television as a medium that could teach is being fulfilled. There are wonderful things on television today. But certainly in the feature film area, I think that is really over.
I think so too. Yeah, because I remember Bill on Fridays. You get the Friday paper, and then you run over to the movie section to see what movies are of it.
Yes.
What movies you want to see this weekend, and that's not that long ago. I'm talking 20 or 25 years ago, and I don't know if people do that anymore. I don't even know if they have a movie section in the papers anymore, so it's a different time. We've got a few minutes left, and I wanted to go to the subject of Twitter, because it seems like every other couple of days we're getting another story about Twitter And I think I mentioned a couple of times ago, Bill, a few weeks ago when we chatted, that it didn't shock me to learn that Twitter or Facebook was run by a bunch of left-wingers from San Francisco. I mean, it didn't really surprise me. I mean, it's not like,
no. Wow,
you mean they're to the left? So that never really surprised me. I expected that. But what I didn't expect, Bill, was the FBI involvement.
That's
the
shocking
part that I think has to be investigated, and we're learning. I don't want to accuse the FBI or the people at the FBI of doing something illegal, but I would like to know what the heck they were doing. And here's, Bill, where I like to present an idea. I think this is where Senator Joe Manchin could actually do something for the country and for West Virginia, because he may very well be holding the vote that could make an investigation not just in the House but in the Senate as well, Bill. We need both houses involved in this investigation. We need a joint investigation like Iran-Contra or Watergate of the tech industry. We really do, Bill, because what the FBI was doing is I cannot explain it, Bill. I mean, I hear these things coming out, and I'm going, what in the heck was the FBI doing, Bill?
Well, some people in the FBI were apparently giving guidance to Twitter on what they wanted blocked. And that, of course, is an outrageous situation for the FBI. It has nothing to do with the FBI's charter. It is the politicization of the FBI. And if there's one element of the United States government that you don't want politicized, it's the police element, the FBI.
Right.
That
That's
is supposed right. to be... Now, J. Edgar Hoover was head of the FBI for many, many years. He actually founded the modern FBI. And there's no question that he did do some things in his career that were improper. I think that's been pointed out. However, he made a great contribution to law enforcement in America, and he never allowed the FBI to be taken over by other elements in the United States government and then used as their personal police force, which is what we have today. We have the politicization of the FBI, where people in the FBI were basically tooting the party line to Twitter of the administration. Absolutely unacceptable. You hear about it for a day from Republicans, and then they go on to something else. But this should be the subject of a massive investigation. If we can't get it in the Senate, then let's get it in the House. A massive investigation of what the FBI has become in preparation for what we hope will be a Republican administration after 2024. I'm not sure of that, of course, but this is the kind of thing. You talk about an assault on democracy. It is an assault on democracy when the premier police agency in the world, or law enforcement agency in the world, is corrupted. Now,
right.
I think that the agents in the field probably do the same great job that they've always done. But there are people at the top who are political appointees, and I think we need a new head of the FBI and a new spirit running the FBI, and we need a new attorney general who will make sure that the FBI is run correctly.
I think this is the big scandal, Bill, in 2023, yeah, because the information is going to get worse when these people get a subpoena.
That's right.
I would like to know, for example, and I'm sure you do too, Bill, and we're kind of running out of time, so I got to be brief, but I would like to know about these 50 so-called experts who signed that letter saying that the Hunter Biden story was Russian disinformation.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd like to know how in the heck they came up with that conclusion, because you know as well as I do, Bill, that changed the second debate between Trump and Biden. That
yes.
debate was... completely, because he had that letter that he could say, well, you know, these 50 people say that this is Russian disinformation, that basically took away the issue from Donald Trump. Trump was hitting him very hard and effectively, I thought. But, you know, Biden had that letter. He says, well, look, this is all Russian disinformation. But that, I think, whether that changed the election, I don't know. I cannot prove it. But it certainly did change the second debate. And that debate would have been totally different. And that was 2 weeks before the election, Bill.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I think you're totally correct. Intelligence agencies must be free of political taint. They must be free of any taint. They must give to the executive correct information, timely information, and that should be their job.
That's it. No, you're exactly right. And in this case, you know, I think that some of these people were doing things that they shouldn't be, and I like to know. I like to know. I'm not, you know, I'm not interested in a circus trial, but I would like to know what the heck they were doing, because what bothers me more than anything else, Bill, is that they're hurting the reputation of the FBI agent who wakes
That's
up
right.
every morning and does a great job. That's
and
what
does a great job, and at the risk of his life. That's absolutely
That's right.
true. It's the same thing we are seeing with police forces.
Exactly.
People are leaving police forces in droves, and it is very hard to recruit good police officers. But who wants
That's
to
right.
be a police officer in Baltimore?
No, I mean, you're exactly right. That's why they've got, what, 70% of the police force, or 30%? They cannot fill 30% of the force. I mean, it's absolutely horrible. Well, Bill, my resolution for you is that the New Year's resolution is a great year for Urgent Agenda, and we'll get together again next Tuesday. We'll
That's
do it,
right.
I guess, on the 2nd. And
yeah.
I do want to get more into Twitter next year, because I think it's going to be one of the big stories, Bill.
It will be one of the big stories, and it must be made understandable by the Republican Party. Get out
well, that's
there
a
and
challenge.
Get the words right.
That's a challenge, but that's where I'm hoping that the chairman of the committee, the fellow who never wears a suit, always has a shirt and tie. I forgot his name right now.
Jim Jordan.
Jim Jordan. I think if anybody can do it, it's him, because
yes.
he's got that wrestling coach mentality. And I just think he can make it very effective next year. So, Bill, Happy New Year to you and to your family. Enjoy the New York celebration, and we'll get together next year.
Same back to you, Silvio. I look forward to it.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking a little bit about Twitter there at the end. That's going to be a big story. Well, thank you so much for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and Happy New Year. We'll see you the next year. Bye-bye.